nearly a week to the end of August, September. We're going in for Christmas. I couldn't believe it. I went in a shop the other day and they started getting out the Halloween stuff's been out for weeks, but now they're starting to put the Christmas stuff out. I mean, look at it outside. I mean, we were just talking about the weather, my guest the night before the show started, and it's still sort of 80, 90 degrees. And we did have 24 hours of rain, though, which caused all sorts of flooding and roads to be closed and stuff like that. You wouldn't have thought we'd be ready for it, would you, after all that drive stuff? But yes, we did have some rain, and the grass has grown at least 3 inches as I've been watching it today, which means another cutting of it. But I can't complain. We can't complain. We've had a good summer, and a bit of rain like that really helped. But I'm here, and so is my guest. Now, when you think of like murder mystery stuff, so especially from like the 30s, 40s, 50s, perhaps as well, the likes of Father Brown and Jeeves and Wooster, and of course, the only thing to come out of Belgium, Poirot. Well, I say the only thing. You've got Tintin, who Hergé's Adventure of Tintin, who also comes out of Belgium, but nothing else has ever come out of Belgium. We all know that. But there's a new person on the block. Jessica Minton and her mysteries. Who? Well, you haven't heard, you're going to find out now, because on the show today, I have the one and only Sharon Healy-Yang. Hi, Sharon, how are you doing?
Great, Barry, how's everything with you?
It is fine, and as we've been talking, good. I have my tea, and so I am ready. You, of all people, who I know are a definite tea person, because I know your website, you've got a list of tea rooms, I believe.
Yes.
And yes, we've got a couple around here. I went to one about 6 months ago, very nice one. I can't remember where it was. It wasn't that far away. It might have been Avon or something like that, I think. And then there's definitely one in Seymour that I've been to a couple of times there. So, yes. The only thing is, of course, well, yeah, I say the only thing because all this flavour stuff that you get is what I call posh tea. Not the normal everyday drink. What the number one tea in England is a tea called PG Tips, and luckily enough, in what the tea room we went to, they actually had that for the people who want plain tea, not the flavoured herbals, this, that, the other. But yes, PG Tips, and you can tell it because it is in pyramid tea bags. Now, the reason it's being in pyramid tea bags, I know this is nothing to bother, but this bit of education for everybody. The reason it's in pyramid tea bags is it infuses, when you put the water in it, it actually helps infuse the tea quicker because it's able to circulate within the pyramid. And when it was being brought out, I actually went to the factory where they were making for 2 years to make sure they had enough stock when they launched it, these tea bags. And it was most of the wonderful things I've ever seen. It was like an automated sewing machine. It sort of, the bag went in, stitched along one side, turned it, stitched along the other side, turned it, stitched along the other side. Fascinating. Anyway, that's how PG Tips launched their pyramid tea bags. But that's that story. Now, what about you? Because you're one of these people who've now retired, I believe.
My
people know I'm the black sheep in my family, being the only person who's not a teacher. Though I must admit, my sister, my brother-in-law, and that have all now, I say now retired, they're now what's called Ofsted. They go and if there's complaints against a school or a teacher or something like that, now they've retired, they go and sit on the board that checks out teachers. But yes, but they were English. I'm not an English teacher because I can't spell. And that's as simple as that. I could imagine putting something on the blackboard and, with my spelling, no chance at all.
Well, you just squiggle the word so they're not sure
You say that. This is why there is an increase in the number of doctors and lawyers who write fiction. Because lawyers are telling stories all the time, after all.
Yeah.
And now there's laptops. There's no trouble trying to read doctors' writing like there used to be. So it's simple as that. When were you along the way? Because I think it was English you taught. Have you always sort of written little stories? As soon as you go to crayon, writing little stories or anything?
Well, pretty much. The first story I ever wrote was I was 8 years old, and I wanted to be like my brother because I had an older brother and he wrote. So I decided I'd write a story about a vampire, and. this vampire is following this girl as she's walking down the street, although my spelling wasn't that good, so it was he's following this grill.
See, you just take after me.
Yeah, but I was eight.
Yeah,
so,
that's true. Yeah.
She gets on the bus, and he gets on the bus, and later I said, why would a vampire take a bus? Why doesn't he just turn into a bat and fly after her? I never resolved that, but I've since gotten much better at writing, so I don't usually have those kind of issues now.
So when did the idea of Jessica Minson come along?
Well, I'm an old movie buff. I love movies from the 30s and 40s and some of the 50s, and I have specific actors and actresses that I really like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite of the actresses is Joan Bennett.
Okay.
And I loved her because she, sometimes she was a femme fatale, but other times she was this, what I call a smart talking gal. You know,
yeah.
she you know, had a snappy comeback. She knew what was going on.
Sassy.
And I really liked that. And I want to write about that kind of a character. I don't know, maybe I kind of identified, because sometimes I'm pretty sarcastic, but, I love that type of character. So she inspired me for Jessica Minton, and I wanted to have a heroine who was, you know, smart, strong, independent, intelligent, witty, but human, because if you're perfect, you know, you'd solve the mystery in a minute and there'd be no problems. So she, you know, she has her own weaknesses. One of her things is, especially at the beginning, is sometimes she's too nice and she's too trusting, and so she kind of gets herself into some messes that way. But I really was inspired by films, and so I wanted to write my own stories about that sort of character. So I cast the characters in the books after some of my favorite actors. So her sister Elizabeth I cast as Rosalind Russell, and I thought it would be so much fun to have the two of them, you know, smart talking back and forth.
Yep.
And and in fact, some of it also was based on my sister-in-law and I.
Does she know that? Does she know?
Yes, she does.
Okay.
Yes, she does.
I was going to say, she does now.
And she hasn't put any arsenic in my food yet, so, you know.
That one, arsenic and old lace. There you go. There's another one for us. Yeah. So I mean, this period of time, as I said, sort of 30s, 40s, early 50s, that's your penchant. That's your favorite bit of time, is it, around that sort of period?
I mean, I don't want to have lived back then because, you know, there was a war on and nobody knew how it was going to end. And my marriage, because my husband's Chinese, my marriage would have been illegal in 26 states. And, you know, and women had very little, didn't have as much opportunity. So I don't think I would have been able to get a PhD back then. So
if you'd have been allowed even to go to college.
Yes. But I do enjoy, there are certain aspects of that time period about, you know, the positive things. I like the music. I like some of the attitudes that people have about working together and being loyal to one another and trying to do the right thing. And, you know, it's like the music, the movies, I love that. And I always heard my parents talk about that time period. You know, they were young people. My dad was actually in the Navy during World War II. And my mom was on the home front. This is before she met him. And she was an inspector in one of the war industries.
Okay.
And so they would talk about the time. And I liked the feel I got from that. And when I watched the old movies, I really enjoyed sort of the camaraderie and the humor, and I sort of like in the film noir, there's kind of a dreaminess to it. I enjoyed that. So that's what kind of pulled me in.
I can understand that a lot. I remember growing up
in
the sort of 50s, late 50s.
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon. There was always a Sunday afternoon film on the BBC. We had all the Bob Hope and Bing Crosby films, you know, all the road films and things. What's the one I was watching last night? The Black Tent I was watching last night. And that sort of stuff. And, you know, that's what we were raised on, all that sort of film. And I was, my wife, she loves all these detective stuff. She's Midsummer's Mysteries and all that, but she likes Father Brown. And I say, well, that's how that was, the cars like that, you know, and the things like that. And it was that's how it was in that sort of between war almost period. It was a totally different world after the First World War.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my husband and I are both addicted to Father Brown.
Aha! There you go.
We love that.
Which Father Brown do you prefer?
Well, I actually like the second one because there's more of a community in it. And so I like that when I'm – things that I read and write and watch. I mean, I like science fiction also. So I've just been watching – going through the DVDs of Eureka.
Okay.
And again – that's a place where it's a community, and you know, even though there are bad people sometimes, there are people who care about each other, who kind of try to help one another. One of the things I liked about the tagline for the new Father Brown was it solving crimes and saving souls? I thought that was nice.
That is, and it was. I mean, you look through, going through sort of all like the Second World War black and white films, the Blitz and everything going on, and there's always the people down on the, you know, on the in the underground stations, you know, with the bombs going off, and they're upstairs, and there's always sort of a couple of wise cracking people there and everybody helping, you know, and the bloke, I remember the bloke coming down the stairs and says, they've bombed the Rose and Crown, and the woman turns around and says, oh, they have to drink in the King's Egg now, you know. And that's how it was.
Well, it's a good way to sum your nose at Hitler, you know.
I mean, and this is it, the spirit.
Yes.
Something like that brings everybody together. And you still see it occasionally when there is a sort of something happen. But because countries are now such a melting pot, perhaps there isn't that sort of side. But this still is, I think, underneath it all. People will come together when it's time. So you started off with our heroine.
Yes.
With Jessica. And you said, you know, the sister, based on your sister-in-law. Now, what about the cat? Because isn't there a bit of a wise guy cat, which we've got here, by the way, sitting in the doorway. I've got one of those.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have two cats now. One of them is meowing at me because she wants more food.
Yeah, that sounds familiar, yeah.
But the cat in this, Dusty, is based on the first cat I ever had growing up. And she was a gray tiger cat. She was smart. She was bossy. She was a wise guy. And so I based her, the cat in the story, on her and some of her actions, like her passion for Polish ham and her being very persnickety about who she liked and who she didn't like. You know, all these kind of things. That really was Dusty. That was Dusty, and she was the same name. I mean, I remember she was so smart. I remember she was not allowed, this was the tough days for cats, to get on the good furniture.
Right.
So I remember I came home, and I just happened, very quietly, looked in the window, and she was on some of the parlor furniture, and I didn't say anything, and I came in the house, and now suddenly she's on the rug under the coffee table. It's like, boom!
Well, we've got a big dog as well. And they are the best of friends. I mean, the cat waits by the door for the dog to come in after the dog's been out. And they walk down the hallway side by side. The dog's 130 pounds. and they walk side by side. It's like watching Laurel and Hardy from the back. And then the cat just flops down like a dead cat, and the dog's nuzzling it, saying, "Get up and play, get up and play." And they zoom up and then, oh my goodness, they are. But they do work together. You know, if there's stuff left on the counter, the cat gets up, knocks it on the floor for the dog to share. You
know, yes, of course.
So we've got the characters. Now, the first book was Bait and Switch, was that it?
Yes.
So that was, I mean, is that an idea you'd had for a while that you finally sort of got to write?
Yeah, it was. Well, it was interesting. The first draft I ever finished, I finished like in 1980. And I, you know, shopped it around and nobody was interested. And what happened was, you know, in 1980, that was only 40 years from when it was written.
Right.
But as I got to into the 90s and the aughts and the teens, suddenly that time period became historical because,
yep.
And you notice there's a lot of writing, Rhys Bowen and Catherine Elia, is it Catherine Elia Hope? Yeah, different, oh, Maggie Hope, that's that writer, yeah. A lot of those books suddenly came out. So I was able to finally get it published. I was always working on it the whole time,
mm-hmm.
in 2016, but it was many years later. And, you know, part of the situation was life got in the way. You know, I got a master's and a PhD, and I was teaching. But I was always writing, and I even wrote the sequel before the first one got published.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I just, you know, if you're writing, you just have to keep writing.
Of course you do. And a lot of time,
yeah.
People, if your first one comes out, people are demanding when your second one is going to come out. The fact you had it sitting there ready, that was great.
No, that worked out wonderfully. So, you know, it was something I think I was influenced a bit by an old movie called All Through the Night with Humphrey Bogart,
yep.
and
yep.
Peter Lorre. So you know that. Do you know that movie?
It rings a bell, definitely.
And it was, you know, very much a Nazi fifth columnist, but
yep.
It was also sort of tongue-in-cheek. So I liked that style, and I felt that really influenced how I created it. I really wanted to get the humor. I wanted the suspense, and then there's also romance in there. And, of course, she has to choose between two guys, and I didn't want to make the guy she didn't pick. Usually, you know, I don't want to give away who she does or doesn't
right.
pick, but I wanted to make sure it was competition for both of them. So, you know, like her steady boyfriend, I pictured like a young Laurence Olivier, so I figured that's going to, like, really make people, oh, that's
oh,
a handsome
right.
guy. Yeah.
Right.
So,
Humphrey Bogart against Laurence Olivier. Now, there's a competition.
Interesting. Well, I guess it depends on what you have in mind, you know.
Exactly. Do you want to go on a boat or do you want to go on a train? Yeah, okay.
So, and then the second novel, Letter from a Dead Man.
Letter from a Dead Man, yeah. 2017, was that?
Yes. And so, yeah, because I already had it written, I mean, I did go through drafts, but I had something I could get to them pretty quickly. That also, in some ways, that's very much like some of the film noir where you have, I was thinking of Murder, My Sweet. That really infuses that, you know, the corruption, there's corrupt
yep.
cops, there's corrupt, we don't know what the FBI guy, what his issue is, and then there's wealthy people who have power trying
yeah.
to hide a murder. So I very much was influenced by that sort of noir.
That sort
so,
of thing, like 39 Steps and, Death on a Train and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And then the latest one
yes,
always
the latest
played
one.
The dark...
Now, this is your new one.
Yes.
Always Play the Dark Horse, which sounds
yes.
like a gambling book to me, but...
Well, it's got a lot of puns in it because there is an actual dark horse who was a racehorse at one point, and that comes out of you know, Jessica loves horse racing,
mm-hmm.
and there's some in jokes about her going to the track. She likes to go to the track with her sister. She doesn't really go with her husband because even though he was with the SOE and he did all kinds of daring things, he's kind of afraid of horses. So,
okay.
But she always picks the black horse, which actually worked for me. I would always pick the black horse.
Oh.
And usually they came in for me.
Right.
So there's some puns in that because of the gambling aspect and the racehorse. But I know, you know, some of my other friends who are English use the term dark horse, not just somebody who's unknown, but because that person is dangerous because they're unknown.
Yep.
So I'm bringing up that fact that there are some dark horses in this story and not just the four-footed kind.
Right. I can understand that, definitely. As you say, the sort of a person
yeah.
Person you wouldn't think would do something turns out to be the actual person who does something, sort of thing. They're the dark horse, you know, the one that
yes.
nobody would suspect.
Yes. So if you're the bad guy, you want to play something that you're not, and if you're the good guy, you want to put your money on that person being a bad guy.
Right. So what sort of response? I mean, your first two came out pretty close to each other, I thought. What sort of response did you sort of pick up quite a following, people wanting this new book?
Well, I do get people, you know, Oprah hasn't had me on yet. I won't
say
that.
She's out there, isn't she?
She hasn't. But I do get people asking me when the next one is coming out. After each one, I get people have been saying to me they think each one has gotten better.
There you go.
And I know, you know, sometimes it's people I really know. But sometimes it's just, you know, if I give a reading somewhere or I'm on a panel for Sisters in Crime, people will ask me, so when is the next one coming out? This was good. When is the next one? So, there's a little bit of a following.
Do you find people like this, you know, the time period that, you know, the books are around? Because I think people just do. I think it brings back memories and escapisms and stuff like that. Is that what you find?
I think there is an audience for this type. I mean, there are some of the more famous writers who are making a good living off of it.
That's true.
You know, like I'm not worried about that. I worked for the state of Massachusetts, so I have a good pension. I don't worry about that. And my husband has a good pension too, so that's
okay. That's fair enough. But it's nice the fact that you're able to write and share something that, you know, you're very keen on yourself in a form that other people can get in, and it's going to make them think, and it's got some humor in it and stuff like that. It's the sort of book that people just love to get their brains around, you know, to try and outfox you or outguess you, shall I say.
Well, you know, I love doing it, and I tell you, it's, you know, there are times when I'm up at night trying to figure out, how can I do this so they won't guess who is which one, and how can I throw some red herrings that, you know, are legitimate kind of red herrings, but, you know, I don't want everyone to guess everything. And pretty much a lot of the readers have said, you know, they haven't figured out who the bad guy was in each of them, or they weren't sure, or they might have figured one thing out, but there were some other things that came up towards the end that shocked them or surprised them. They didn't expect it. So
I remember one lady who wrote you know, thriller sort of detective type books, and what she used to do is just put her character in a situation and leave it to them to get out of.
So she just kind of where inspiration took her.
People know on this show we're a big thing about, you know, the characters lead you and everything like that. And that's what she did. She used to think, right, I'm going to put him in this situation. It was a detective. I think, I'm going to put him in this situation and that. And then, come on, you get yourself out of it. You know, and wait for the character to come. And I say, well, I think I can do this, you know. And fair enough, that's what you're going to do. Well, put that down, because characters, they lead you. I mean, it's no two ways about it.
Well, yeah, I know what you mean. I mean, I do. I'm someone who does have an outline when I start, and sometimes I do outlines of the outlines. But there are times when characters, I had one in, I won't say which book, so I don't want to give anything away. One character I was going to keep bad to the end, and that character was going to die. And as we got towards the end, this character said, no, I'm not really that bad, and I'm not dying.
Now, you say that. People know who've heard me. I remarked on this before, and this was about three, 4 years ago. I think longer now. Probably four or five. Had this lady, and she wrote historical romance. And she was like her 21st book. She was quite a well-known author. I can't remember who it was, but it's like her 21st book. And we were talking about this sort of thing.
Yeah.
And she said, you know, she said, that just happened in this last book. She said, I tried to kill this character off 6 times. The character wouldn't die. I had to go and rewrite the whole thing so the character was a different thing. And she was quite, you know, she literally said, yeah, I had to rewrite it. The character wouldn't die. And it sounds like you've got a similar situation.
That daddy, that person was like that. Not dying, you know, sorry.
So you got the three out. Are you writing, are you working on something else at the moment?
I'm actually working on number four. It's It's called Shadows of a Dark Past, and this one it is still a Jessica Minton mystery, and this is a ghost story.
Ooh.
And because I love the things like The Uninvited and the Val Lewton films, and you know, some of the, I think there was one, it was called Soul of a Monster, or
uh-huh.
It sounds awful, but it's actually a very lyrical, beautiful film. But I love a lot of the 40s. I hate to say horror, because it's not horror the way people think of
no,
it now.
No,
it's haunting.
Exactly. It's mind, it makes you think. Shall I say?
Right.
You know, yeah, it's not the horror where you're hiding behind the seat half the time.
So, in this one, Jessica and her sister join the rest of Jessica's radio crew, the people on her radio program. They're going to do a remote broadcast 2 weeks in a row from this this mansion that's reputedly haunted. The owner has invited them to come. It's an attempt to jump up the ratings. And when they get there, they discover it. Maybe it really is haunted.
Okay. Sounds interesting. Well, I tell you what has been interesting, and that is chatting to you, but time is getting on. So what I'm going to do now is hand the show over to you, so you can tell everybody where they can find out more about you and about your books, of course.
Oh, great. Okay. Well, you know, hi, everybody. Again, I'm Sharon Healy Young. And it looks like Yang, but I say Young. Anyway, my web page, if you want to go to my web page, it's SharonHealyYoung.com. It's on WordPress. And if you go there, I try to make it a really fun site. I have all about the three Jessica Minton novels. And I also have all kinds of stuff about classic mystery writers of the 30s and 40s and 50s, and then writers who copy that style. I have famous tea rooms. I do a blog about all kinds of interesting stuff.
Lots of stuff there, really. It is a very interesting website.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. So I would love you to read my books. They're available if you want to go online, Amazon, Goodreads, bookshop.org, not Goodreads. Well, you can. I have a page there. Barnes & Noble, Kobo, bookshop.org. You can, if you go there to my webpage, you'll see the independent bookstores that carry it. Again, if you like a mystery with a smart-talking gal heroine, you like romance, when I wrote my romance, I actually have her get married, and I think it's kind of fun to write about a couple who are really happily married, even though they have little quips back and forth. But the conflicts aren't between them, but it's them against bad things in the world. If you love the 40s, if you love a good mystery, some smart dialogue, and some neat twists and turns, I think you'll like my Jessica Minton series.
Well, I'm sure people will. It seems a series that a lot of people will like. Thank you so much for being a guest on the show today.
Thank you for having me, Barry. It was really a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you. Well, there you go. My guest today. Very interesting, wasn't it? Sharon Healy Yang. So that's H-E-A-L-Y, or Young, as she says. H-E-A-L-Y hyphen Y-A-N-G. Very interesting. Look for that Jessica Minton series. Well, that's it. I will be back on Sunday between 5 and 6 with Those Were the Days, music from the 20th century. I forgot we're doing. This is the reruns of a couple of choices. I can't remember what we got this week, but it's always a theme, you know. And then after that, from 6 to 7, we have the Swinging 60s, music from the 60s. But until then, and of course, I'll be back next Tuesday and Wednesday with fresh guests. But until then, as always, we have one thing left to say.